Good afternoon. Welcome back to the afternoon call. As Rabbi Shabtai said, we have a great amount of programming coming up. Fantastic speakers, Rashi Yeshiva, Rashi Kolel, who are visiting. Opportunities for Talmud Torah that you will not want to miss. Of course, the beginning of this week's parasha, Yaakov Avinu is running away from his home, and he finds himself at the Makom Mikdash, and he says, it is here that Hashem is, and I didn't even know it. And he realizes the Kedusha of that place. And so I want to speak a little bit about today, which is the Kedusha of, not the Beis HaMikdash, but the Kedusha of the Kotel, which is, of course, our remaining. If everyone could silence their phones, that would be helpful. What would the Kedusha of the Kotel, you have on the cover there, which I think is a very beautiful quote from Israel's third president on his first visit to the Kotel, which again, I shared with you not to show you that I could Google quotes about the Kotel. That was not my intention. But rather, I think it very much captures the emotional connection that we have to the Kotel, a reminder that the Kotel is not just a wall for us, but it is a place where all of our tefillos from 2,000 years have gone. And that in and of itself gives it a certain level of Kedusha. Of course, three questions I want to deal with today. Number one is, why do people bother putting notes in the Kotel? Why do we have that idea? Number two is, are we even allowed to touch the Kotel? What is the Kedusha of the Kotel nowadays? And number three, the third question I want to deal with, is, are we allowed to throw out those notes? What happens to those notes? And are we allowed to throw them out? If you look here on page number one, I have, just because it was the most famous incident, of someone who pulled a note out of the Kotel. President Obama, when he visited the Kotel in 2008, so of course someone went in and took out the note, Maariv newspaper, and they printed a copy of what then President Obama had written, which many people were very upset about because they felt that it violated one of the most personal, emotional, and religious components of ourselves, that a person should be able to have a communication with Hashem without anyone else publicizing it on the internet. So again, so I want to talk a little bit about those notes. There's a great Simpsons episode about that, but not the crowd for that. But I do want to talk a little bit about the notes and a little bit about why we have the notes and the halachic status of the Kotel. So if you turn to page number two, we're going to start with the halachic status of the Kotel. If you look in the Chayadim on source number one, the Chayadim, the Alta Zaidi, my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, so he writes the following, Tzarech li'zayir me'od, shelo yikanes b'makom ha'mikdash shekulanu t'mei mason. We all have to be very careful not to go into the makom mikdash because we are all Tame Mason. We know that there were various categories of Kedusha, that not all places in Eretz Yisrael or in the land, in the world are exactly the same. In fact, the Mishnah in Kilayim delineates 10 levels of spatial Kedusha, which exist within the land of Israel, each area which is holier than the next area. And those areas model themselves after the encampments of the Mishkan, where we know that there was the Machane Shechina, there was the Machane Leviah, and there was the Machane Yisrael. There was the area of the Shechina, which was what we call the Mishkan. There was the Machane Leviah, which is where the Leviim went. And there was the Machane Yisrael, which was the rest of the camp. That idea, that concept of different levels of Kedusha exists within Eretz Yisrael. So for example, a Metzora cannot even enter into Yerushalayim. Someone who is Tamei Meis cannot enter where the Mikdash is. They can stop at the Chael, which is the demarcating point between where the Jews and the non-Jews used to be able to go in the Beis HaMikdash. Someone who is Tamei Meis cannot enter into the Mikdash. And then there was the third category of Tuma, which is Tamei Hayotze Migufo, Tamei that emits from a body. So for example, a Keri, a Nida, a Zava, those are people that can go to the Mikvah and nonetheless be on Har HaBayis. So for example, nowadays, for those who choose to go on to Har HaBayis, which in and of itself is a very significant machlokes and a divide within the Jewish people, before you were to go on Har HaBayis, you have to go into the mikvah, assuming that we are all Bali Keri, we are all Tumas Keri, so you have to go into the mikvah, and a woman, right, before you were to go on to Har HaBayis, and again, I've never been, I know Rabbi Goldberg goes when he in Israel, and he goes to the mikvah beforehand, because again, that is that notion of Tuma Hayotze Migufa. Hold on. So, the question is, what exactly is the status of the Kotel? So says the the Chai Adam. He says you have to be very careful. The Makam HaMikdash Shukulanu Tamei Mesim. You can't go onto the Makam Mikdash because we are all Tamei Mes. That's a very big problem. Ve'anichnas betuma chayev karis. And if you go in a status of tuma, then you are chayev karis. De'afilu l'man damar kedusha sa'aretz b'teila. Even if you say that the land of Israel no longer has its kedusha, aval kedusha sa'mikdash lo batla. But the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, that area never loses its sense of kedusha. V'lachein, therefore, says the Chayadam, kishaholech l'makom HaMikdash sarach she'elo harabayis b'mizrach. You have to be very careful as you're going to the Makom HaMikdash. V'ushayamod b'marav panim l'mizrach tahaynu l'mikdash. You have to face in the correct way. Ki ha'kosel ha'maravi ha'nishar, because the kosel, the kotel, the western wall, Rotze Lomar, what are we talking about, says the Chai Adam, when we refer to the Kotel? Rotze Lomar, Kotel Ha'azara Shahaisa Lachure Kodesh HaKadoshim Yud Aleph Amah. According to the Chai Adam, the Kotel is a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash, therefore the western wall was a wall of the Azara. V'lachein Mutter Leilech Samachla, therefore you can get close to it, but if you go in the wrong way, that is when you are going to have a problem. That is when you are going to end up in the wrong place, and that's not going to be good for your religious longevity. So the Chai Adam clearly views the wall of the Kotel HaMaravi as a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash. That is a problem for us. The Tzitz Eliezer disagrees. The Tzitz Eliezer in source number 2, he has a very lengthy tshuva about this topic. And he says, Pok Chazi on the right hand side, Ad kama his lav tu gedole adoro shalafanenu, kede lidchot ta'anot meorim shalchachme Torah, shiratsu la'asur afilu amida yidea kotel amaravi. Right, there are those who wanted to prevent us even from standing near the kosel. Michashashu laya kotel hazeh hu kotel azara. Right, exactly against the Chai Adam. He says there are people like the Chai Adam who wanted to stop us from going to the Kotel because they were afraid that that was a wall of the Azar. If you skip over to the left-hand side, he says, where I have it bracketed, Amnam benogeya lekotel amaravi kvar nimnu vigamru. We've already concluded she'inenu mekotel ha'azara kim kosel har habayis. He said it is not a wall of the Azara, but rather it is the wall of Harabais, which of course makes our lives much easier. Because if I'm on the outside of Harabais, I don't have to worry, assuming I'm not a Mitzora, I don't have to worry about the laws of Tuma the same way I'd be on Harabais. Mikidikasa, Besefer, Avoda Tama, Hayu, Po, Ze, Mikarov, Anashim, Ne'amanim, Ne'chmadim, Talmidi, Chacham, Yushalayim, that they were standing there with a lot of really great individuals from Yushalayim. Uvesocham, Ayim, Muflag, Gadobatora. And amongst them was a great gadol, v'dibarti imam odos hakotel amaravi, and I was talking about the kosel. V'kulam po echad anu v'amru she'ein lam shum suffik eis. They said nowadays there's no suffik, there's no doubt whatsoever. V'muskam eitzo kulam, it is universally agreed upon. Bein svaradim, bein ashkenazim, whether you're Ashkenaz, whether you're svard. She'akotel ha'maravi eino lo mina heichal velo mina azara rak meharabais. It is the wall of Harabais, and therefore, according to the Tzitz Eliezer, if it is the wall of Harabais, now it helps me out. Now, obviously, this is a significant machlokas. According to the Chai Adam, you would be much more restricted in going near the Kotel. According to the Tzitz Eliezer, where we stand on the opposite side of the Kotel, that is not going to be a problem for any of us. It's only if we were to cross on the other side of the Kotel, which again, some people have the custom, some people not, but that is when it would be a problem. What are some of the other issues that come, right? So are we scot-free? What are some of the other halachic issues that may appear when it comes to notes in the Kotel? So if you look in the Rambam, in Hilchos Bias Mikdash, Perek Gimel, it's based on the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim on Amid Beis, tells us that someone who is Tameh, who stretches his hand into the sanctuary, right, into the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, so they transgress a prohibition. That is called what? Bia b'miktsas, which means what if I only go a little bit into the Beis HaMikdash? So I stick my hand in. I stick my fingers in. So my body is on the outside. It's only my hand, partial of my body, which is going into an area of the Beis HaMikdash, which could theoretically be, or which is, problematic. Is that going to be a problem? That notion of bia b'miktsas. If you look in the Rambam, so the Rambam codifies this la'alacha. The Rambam, however, only says that it is a derabanan. Says the Rambam, v'chein tamei shehichnis yado l'mikdash. Someone who is impure, who inserts his hand into the Beis HaMikdash, makinoso makas mardus, so we give him makos. V'chein kol tamei ba'av me'avos atumo shel divrayim. O she'achal ochlin tmeim v'shasim ashkin tmeim v'nichnas l'mikdash b'meizit kodim she'yitvol mechineso makas mardus. Again, similarly for a different area of halacha. The Ravid paskins in the next source, which we're not going to read inside, but you'll trust me, the Ravid says that this is an iser deraisa. Whether you say it's a derabanan or a deraisa, is this going to be a problem for us? When I put a note in the kotel, in all likelihood, some of my fingers are going to go into the wall of the Har HaBayis. Now, once my hand goes into the wall of Har HaBayis, this notion of bia b'miktsas, which means that I'm partially now in Har HaBayis, is that going to be a problem for me? Is there a halachic prohibition of doing that? So if you look in Rav Moshe Shturmbach, in his Mo'adim L'Zmanim, source number 4, he asks this question. And in there, he quotes the Sefer Mishkanos Labir Yaakov. Mishkanos Yabir Yaakov tells the story of Rav Diskin. He says, Mevi Mimaran Diskin, She'osur lahachnis yadov lepirtzos elu mishum tebia miktas shma bia. Based on this Rambam, based on this halacha in the Gemara in Zvachim, Paskins, the Mishkanos Labir Yaakov, that it's usur for you to stick even your fingers into the base on me, into the kotel, because by doing so, bia miktas havi bia, it's as if I'm entering into Har HaBayis. Entering onto Har HaBayis is a problem. Because again, assuming we are all tumas keri, then it's going to, unless you've gone to the mikvah, so then it's going to be a problem. Because now, I would have a significant challenge.
Where's Har HaBayis start? At the beginning of the wall or at the back of the wall?
The Rambam says, right? Sheichnis yado lamikdash. You're putting your hand in.
The wall has a thickness.
Okay, so, right, so they talk about that as well. We're going to assume for now that even so much as putting it into the wall is going to be a problem. Right, right, he goes on to say, "V'chein mevi divrei hagaon tumim the aderet," right, Rav Cook's father-in-law, "she'asur lehedya bazeh," who equally paskins that this is prohibited. Says Rav Shturmbach, "V'lechora kedai leisrachik tzas me'akota v'lo lavo lingoa," right, and it was that classic picture of someone who goes up to the kotel just for the photo op. So says the aderet, maybe you shouldn't do. Says Rav Shturmbach, maybe you shouldn't do that. Shema yachnis yado lepirtos elu. Maybe you'll put your hand into these cracks. She'asur min ha-Torah. Quoting the Ravid that it's asur v'Torah. Uchemosh yivur lefaninu akob ezras Hashem yisparach v'chein b'tamei shenogeo b'kotel filu b'chutz ulai makum lachosh te'asur midrabanan. Right, he says even if you don't sink your fingers into it, but you just touch the wall on the outside, he says maybe that in and of itself is going to be an isur midrabanan. Who disagrees with this? Who says that it's not a problem at all? So if you go to source number 5, the Avnei Nezer. Now, it could be I misquoted the Avnei Nezer, but he says it very succinctly at the end. He says, if you look in the last line, Ach b'choma Har HaBayis lo matzinu. Says the Avnei Nezer that the wall of Har HaBayis has no inherent kedusha whatsoever. Why does he say it? And again, I think I quoted the wrong part, but he says that the whole reason that Har HaBayis had Kedusha was because the Beis Din walked within it. He says, you ever see Beis Din walking on the wall of Har HaBayis? Since Beis Din did not walk on the wall itself, it means that the wall itself would not have Kedusha. And therefore, again, in a different area, obviously, the Avnei Nezer paskins that it's not going to be a problem to touch the wall of Har HaBayis. Again, sticking your fingers in might be a little bit different, but at least as Rav Shturmbach was going to be machmir on at least touching the wall, The Avnei Nezer says that the wall itself has no Kedusha, and therefore you have nothing to worry about. All of this is just a nice way of introducing whether or not you can even put a note in the Kotel. What we haven't yet dealt with is why in the world would you want to put a note in the Kotel? When did that become a thing? When did that become a thing? Right in the 1500s, were they putting notes in the Kotel? I don't know. Right? When exactly did it become, what's the earliest source that we have for putting our notes in the Kotel? Again, which some people do, I personally do not. And number two is what happens to these notes in the Kotel? Simply do the math, right? It's impossible that all the notes continue to stay there. You would physically run out of room. So I have there an article from a number of years ago, but an article that shows that twice a year, they go in and they clean out all of the notes of the Kotel. We're going to come back to exactly what happens to those notes. But what's the source for the notes in general? So if you look in source number 6, this is in that same tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer. And there he quotes some amazing, amazing sources. Now I'm going to read you the sources in its entirety, even though we only really need the end of part of it. And the reason why I'm going to read it is because, well, I guess this year is a little bit different. Right, most of us, I'm going to guess in this room, I don't know, maybe some of you live there. Who's been to Israel in the last 2 years? So one, two, right? So most of us haven't been able to get to Israel as frequently as we would like. On a good year, how many of us would have gone to Israel? Right? A lot of us, okay? So I haven't been there in 2 years. So that familiarity that we usually have with the Kotel, right? You jump on a plane, you're there, you're at the Kotel a half hour later. Most of us don't have. Let's read this source inside. He quotes it from the Sefer Yalkut HaGershoni, which is just a very refreshing reminder of the miracle and the blessing that you and I have to have frequent the Kotel as often as we do, and how historic that is, because throughout history, it was not as simple as we experience it nowadays. So he quotes here, fourth line, and you have on the left-hand side, some of the English translation. He says, Agav, Mechaber Yakar Zeh Kosei B'Sipur Mas'ei Eretz HaKodesh Al Bikureo Al Yidei HaKotel HaMaravim Kedvarim Ha'ilu. Right, the author describes his visit to Eretz Yisrael and his visit to the Kotel. And he says the following, Bayom Revi'i B'Chamesh B'Boker, Wednesday, 5 p.m., La'achar Sheikh Damnu La'achar shikdamnu litvos b'sarena b'mikvah. Interesting. He went to the mikvah. Halachnu el hakotel amaravi. El hasrid hayachid l'davo nenu mi beis hamikdash. The last remaining wall, the last remnant of the beis hamikdash. L'mare hakotel karanu shuvet bigdenu. The moment we saw the kotel, we tore our clothes. Ubachinu, we cried. V'hilalnu k'misbeit ava b'no yichido. And we started wailing like a father crying for a son. You see, for us, the Kotel is a tourist attraction. Right? I always say this about my friends who studied at what was then Yeshivat HaKotel, which is now Netiv Aryeh, or Yeshivat HaKotel, where it's new location. Right? If you learn in Eish HaTorah over there, right? This Wednesday night, I'm behind the beam. We're having on Jamie Geller, who works at Eish HaTorah. So if you're there as frequently, I always said, does it lose some of its significance when you're coming out of the shower and there's the Kotel, right? When you're, I remember I was once at Netiv Aryeh for a Shabbaton. It was so strange. I went to sleep overlooking the Kotel. I woke up overlooking the Kotel. It felt almost profane to have any other conversation because to me, the Kotel is so significant. So you get a little bit of that flavor here, right? If we think about what the Kotel is, well, for us, it is a significant and joyous and it's a tourist attraction, it's really a symbol of something very sad, which is that there used to be a Beis HaMikdash there, and it's no longer there. I believe they say, I think Rav Sternbach quotes in one of his tshuva, that the Maharal Diskin would not visit the Kotel. And the reason why he would not visit the Kotel is he writes that he was afraid that if he saw the Makom Mikdash in its complete destruction, so he would lose his mind. And so therefore, he never wanted to go because it was so painful for him. So that's what he says here. He cried like a father mourning his son. Kol habala kan yivcha korcho. Anyone who comes to the Kotel, you don't have a choice. You're going to cry. Afilo im livo leiv evan. Even if you have a heart of stone, Nisa na ta kore nichbad valechel kotel vitivukach bekach. Even if you have a heart of stone, go to the kotel. Sarich lirosa be'ine atzma. You got to see it with your own eyes. Shim lokein I efshar la adam liknos la atzma musag mikach. Right? If you don't see it, you're not even going to believe how amazing it is. Kid palalnu et tefilatenu, we davened bepchi gadol uvechavana tzuma, fervently with crying. Here's such an amazing kam. He says, "V'rishayim anu la'achel la'atzmenu shenid palel tamid bekavana kazo shenid palalnu lifnei hakotel maravi tir shachar sechol." He says we made a commitment that we would always try to daven with the same kavana that we had at the kotel, right? The same fervency, the same level of hitragshut of emotion. Dvarim elu hayotz min alev nichnasim el alev v'anam kenim nechoni hema. Okay, so he goes on. Right, first of all, I just think that's such a beautiful description of what it is, the kotel. If you go down a few lines, the first word in the line is b'sefer. He says now, mariti od b'sefer padeh es Avram. He quotes the sefer padeh es Avram, who quotes the Zohar, which says, v'zecha zisi v'asapra something, b'mamar d'ma'olam lo zaza shchinasa me kotel ma'aravi. The Zohar says that the Kedusha never left the kotel. In other words, the kotel always maintains its level of kedusha. And then he says the following: Hamaisa Rav Shel Harav Mechaim Ben Atar Shenasan LeTalmido Ksav Tzavasa BeKotel Amaravi VeNizdamnu Lo Mizonosav. He tells a story which we're going to see in its primary source. VeUlay MiKoach Zeh Hu Shenishtar Beib Aminag BeHarbe Bnei Adam. He says, and that, I think, is the source of why people put their notes in the kotel. What is that source? So if you turn the page, I have that Orach Chaim for you right here. This is a wild source. Wild source. He quotes from Chaim Eliezer Mimunkach, Behashtachato al Sivan Ha'or Achaim b'Yerushalayim. Sipur b'Osa Maimed al Gedolas Kedushas Or Achaim Hakadosh. Right, so he told this story. Listen to this story. She'ish echad mimim korav, that the Or Achaim once had a disciple, she'yarad minechasav, who had financial difficulty, uval lefanav lishpoch sicho amar goralo v'aniot hamishorer b'beiso v'nichmeru rachamei ha'Or Achaim alav. So he came on hard times, and he comes before the Or HaChaim, pouring his heart out about how difficult things are, and about the adversity that he's facing, and about the poverty that he's going through, and he asks the Or HaChaim to daven for him, to give him rachamim. So what does the Or HaChaim do? Third line. Because of Piska Biklaf, he writes a note, Biksav Ashuris, in Hebrew, V'nasan B'yado, he gives it to this disciple, guard this note. Take good care of it. V'gash el hakotel ha'maravi. Go to the kotel with it. U'bein chagvei avnei ha'kodesh. Tassim es ha'pikta. U'misham tachzer lebeischa. V'haysa lecha liyeshua. And then, once you put the note in the kotel, go home and you will experience the Kedusha. Rav Tzitz Eliezer quoted this and says that he thinks that this is the source for putting notes in the kotel. Now, that's only half the story. You got to read the rest of the story. It's wild what happens. And it might even undermine the story. So you be the judge. The kenasa, that's exactly what this yid did. Ela shebederech chavli chaso. But while he was on his way to the kotel, ba'a ruach se'ara, a gale force wind came, Va'ifas kovo, and it knocked off his hat. Vinisha rak im kippa l'rosho, and he just has a kippa on his head. V'himshich bedarko ad she'aruach ha'afa gam es kippa, so it knocked off his kippa as well. U'kshehit kofeif l'harimo, when he bends down to pick up his kippa and hat, gavra ha'ruach ha'chazaka, another gust of wind comes. Va'ifas ha'pitka miyado, and it knocks the note right out of his hand. B'mar rucho chazar al orachayim. So this Jew is devastated, and he's distraught, and he's despondent, and he comes back to the orachayim. V'siper lo kol ha'maisa. He tells the Or HaChaim exactly what happened. The Or HaChaim anolo ma'aseh lo asiyata milta. Right, like what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? L'yamim nimsu pitkazo. A few days later, this Jew found this petek. He found this note. Uba haisa pnuya pnia l'shchina kdosha kaviyachol b'zeh lashon. And they found that was written on this note was a tefillah from the Or HaChaim to the Ribono Shel Olam. And this is what it says. Achosi, Rayasi, Yonasi, Tamasi, of course from Shir HaShirim, my beloved. Avakesh, Barachamecha, Lashpia, Parnasa, Tova, Leploni, Menploni, Vikasa, Vichosim, Aleh, Shmo, Chaim Ben Atar. They found a note on it, which was a tefillah for the Parnasa of this Yid, and it was signed by the Or HaChaim. Now, what's the problem with the story? In the way that Tzitz Eliezer quotes the story. Tzitz Eliezer says, you see, the Or HaChaim wrote a note, and the note should be given and brought to the base of, to the Kotel. What's the problem? Didn't get there. Why? Because this wind came and knocked it off. What does that show you? Maybe you're not supposed to. So the story itself seems a little bit ambiguous, seems a little bit contradictory. Right? The Or HaChaim, the way that Tzitz Eliezer quotes the story is, you see, the Or HaChaim sent a Jew to the Kotel with a note. But the cynic in us could say, you see, Hashem didn't want him to bring the note in the Kotel, so he knocks it right out of his hand. Right? Okay. That is, according to Tzitz Eliezer, the source for why it is we put these notes in the Kotel. What happens to these notes? What happens to these notes? So if you look in source number 8, Rav Shmuel Rabinovich, who is the Rav of the Kotel, has a tshuva on this Shaarei Tzion, where he writes, thousands and thousands of Jews from all walks of life come to the Kotel. Rosh min piske bakasha uminichim osom bein nidchei haKotel. Right, lezikron tova livnei Hashem. This is how they daven to Hashem. And then he says the problem is that it becomes too much. Again, just envision continuously stuffing in the notes. So it can't fit it all. It happens to be mine. Until I started learning this, I guess it's so obvious, but I never thought about it, right? I never thought about, like, they disappeared, I don't know. Anyways, so he says it's impossible. So he says that they're going to clean it out twice a year, and he wants to know, in the last line, on the left-hand side, Lefichach, yesh ladun, hayim niten lisrofes piskaos habakashos b'makom legonzan. Do we have to put them into Geniza? What is the halachic status of these notes? What do you say? Is anyone awake? What's the halachic status? Bury them. Why do you bury them? Barack Obama writes. Hold on. First, let's pick apart the first one. Protect my family, Lord. That has Kedusha? So why am I burying it? So what do you say? The contact with the Kosel makes it Kadosh. Okay? So he says bury it. What do you guys think? Why not? I didn't ask. Hold on. I don't want to know what they do. I want to know the halachic status. So he writes here. What?
I saw what they did.
Yeah.
They take it all, and they put it right in the cave. There's a big with ma'ara, and
they put it in there. So he
that'll eventually do it.
So if you look in page number 7, so the continuation of his tshuva, he writes the following. Again, this is not unique to the notes in the Kosel. If you've ever been to the Rebbe Zoel. So people throw notes. They tear it up and they throw a note in. What happens to all those? Right? Blows away. Right? So what happens? A Rebbe who's alive. Someone who brings a note and gives it to a Rebbe. What does he do with those? So he quotes here, V'hinei b'inyan hapiskos, kvitlach. Matzanu hanhago shonos bein tzadikim. He says you see different opinions even within the tzadikim. Yesh hanhago l'sofron ba'esh. There are those who burn them. That he quotes from the Darchei Chaim v'Shalom Munkach, who writes v'gam nag l'sorfam be'esh uvechdei lisrof tzaros Yisrael, because he wants to showcase that you're burning the tzaros of Klal Yisrael. Beautiful imagery. He quotes the Admor Milubavitch, shila achar shayim ayin v'piskos habakasha hayamalo sameish. So too, he when he used to look at the kvitlach, he too used to burn it. So some would burn them. And then he quotes umei idach. He says there are those who preserve them. There are those who keep them. Kein misupar al chazanish, kein misupar al kadosh hamekubal, Rabbi Lezer megraiditz, right? Okay, Rabbi Maiban quotes other sources as well, that they would preserve them, that they would hold on to them. Then he says in the next paragraph, hey, which is obviously not the next paragraph because it went from bays to hey, but he says, what about the following? Many people write the name of Hashem. Hinehiviu lefifnei bedika medugmit shaharbe midlat ha'am mitoch shigiga v'tumlev, right out of ignorance, regilim lirshom bepiske habakasha gam shemos hakodesh kedugma shem havaya kadosh v'lerov shem elokim. People write the name of God, right? They also write anash emashiana, anash elna refanala, v'afilu psukim shleimim kigon psukei hodayel Hashem. They write out full psukim. Umishum kach, bilvad ein lesorfam be'esh. Not only might it therefore be a problem to burn it, because then you are burning the Shem Hashem, he says, but perhaps, he says in the last three lines, v'alkei nishlomer t'tzarech lishtanda lignoz es kol ha'piskos ha'bakasha ha'munachas bein nedvei ha'kotel marabi. Maybe, not only can you not burn them, but you have to bury them. He says in the top left-hand side something fantastic. He says, O Nira, Shagamim nitin lesorfam latomna mederach michubedet, mi blit sorech legonzam kishemos hakodesh, hare shecho shishani shish bezem mishum zilzu bechvodam shahamone beis Yisrael. What a beautiful thing to say. He says, let's say halachically, you don't have to put it in Geniza, you don't have to put it in Shemos. Let's say halachically, you can even burn them. He says, think about what's on these notes. People are pouring their heart and soul out to the Ribono Shel Olam. Is there anything more kadosh than that? So even if it doesn't have official kedusha, but to desecrate it, to throw it in the garbage, to burn it, he says, right, again, there's mishum zilzel bechvodem shel hamonei beis Yisrael. It's mizalzel, the tfilos of Klal Yisrael. Hatmunim, hatomnim es piskeim bein avnei akosel. Beat rakshos rabav and osim libam alzeh. Think about what people are writing on those pieces of paper. People who need fertility, people who need shidduchim, people who need parnasa, and you're just gonna, and they pour their heart and soul out to the Ribono Shel Olam. You're gonna burn that. You're gonna throw that in the garbage. V'ulai rak mishum zeh. He says, even if halachically we don't have to, for this reason alone, yesh lihishtadel linhog behem bechol akavod hagadol biyoseh. Because it contains within them the heart and soul of human beings, the most intimate of conversations between mankind and the Ribono Shel Olam, he says, therefore we have to treat it bechavod hagadol biyoseh, with the most amount of sanctity. V'gnizasam hi mishum kvodam. And the reason why we bury them is to show kavod. To show kavod to the tefilos of Klal Yisrael. I think that's such a beautiful idea. He then says in the next paragraph, he says, but if I'm going to put this out there, everyone should be careful not to write Shem Hashem on it. Right? Because again, he says, we don't want to create Shemus unnecessarily. And therefore he says, yadaktiku l'chavim, she'ina k'siva l'shem tefila el l'shon zikaron greida. He says, if you want to be machmir, when you write it out, say this is not a formal tefila, it's just I'm jotting down notes. Again, I don't know how many people do that. Okay, hold on, I need to make sure I have 4 more minutes. So I'm happy to take questions after. Rav Sternbach, in source number 9, Rav Sternbach wrote a letter to Rav Ravinovich, asked this question, and he says the following, Mizman kibalti michtavo odos piskos binitche hakosel in trichem geniza. Right, doesn't need to be buried. Ve'emes, she'afilu b'trumos u'maisros, she'kadosh. Trumos u'maisros, which are kadosh, what do we do with them? Nahagnu lishpoch la'ashpa, aval lo b'derech bizayon. When you throw out truma maisa, you're allowed to throw in the garbage, but what do? You do it respectfully. In other words, instead of throwing it out with yesterday's chulent, you put it in a separate bag to show a little bit more kavod to it. Ela kroch b'sach niyar v'chedoma, ve'az zorku l'pach, and then you can throw it in the garbage. He says, that is what I think you could do here as well. In other words, you can throw it in the garbage, but you should do it respectfully. You should do it respectfully, therefore don't just throw it out. Right, v'yachol asos kein eina eima sheyirtza, v'imesh gedom shenagu l'hachmir yoser midas chasidus avreinos. If the people want to be more machmir, they can be machmir. But if you're going to throw it out, he says, just make sure you do it respectfully. Rav Asher Weiss was asked this as well. Rav Asher Weiss, in source number 10, says the following: halachically, it does not need to be put into Shemus. B'le'anias da'iti ein piskos elu tzricha geniza midina. Says Rav Asher that halachically, it does not need geniza. Then he says about five lines down, aval tfilos abakashos ishiyut, she'adam shofech milibo, umischatei lefanav yisbarach. But wait a second. These are the tfilos, the most intimate conversations between a person and their creator. Ein bahem kedushas kisvei hakodesh klal, in other words, I can sit in the bathroom and I can think a conversation with Hashem as long as I don't say Shem Hashem. So he says, if that's the case, then obviously this type of conversation with the Ribono Shel Olam does not have Kedusha. And therefore, Rav Asher paskins that that it's not going to be a problem. He says on page number 9, and I know I have 2 more minutes, Rabbi Greyshour. He says, "Amnam im shchiach shekosvim bepiskayim elu shem Hashem opsukim yesh layein." He says, "However, if they have the name of Hashem, then you have to be careful." Ach ap bepsakim shepsukim ksuvim behem yesh lahakel. He says, "You could still be makel." Why? He goes on, "Right aim behem kedusha. They're not going to have kedusha, etc., etc., etc." Velo echad daaf shechalilanu lezalzel mishum minag. He said we should never be mezalzel minag, especially a minag that goes way back. However, kimidoni shalora inimir vaseinu gaone eretz shenagu laniach piskim bein avnei hakosel v'lo yadati mekor upesher minagze. He says you never see the gedolim putting notes in the kotel. That in and of itself should be indicative of how the gedolim have long felt about this issue. So we saw, and the last thing I want to finish with is page number 10. Right, you can read it on your own, but the halachic man, Rabbi Soloveitchik, develops this notion of Judaism as primarily a democratic institution. And what he means by that is that whereas other religions require an intermediary, a physical intermediary, between you and God, Judaism is the exact opposite. Judaism believes that at any time, in any place, anyone has the ability to communicate directly with the Borei Olam. We have that 3 times a day when we come into our Shemoneh Esrei. We have that any moment of the day when we look up and we talk to the creator of the universe. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, this is in his famous thing where he argues against the whole notion of angels as intermediaries, but here I'm going to use in the context of the Kotel. We shouldn't need to put notes in the walls of the Kotel. The beauty of Judaism is that whenever we are and wherever we are, we have the ability to communicate with the Almighty Himself. I just leave you with Rav Kook, source number 12. I'll read for you the English. During the British Mandate, Rav Kook was forced to appear at a royal commission. The commission was convened to discuss why the Jews insisted on praying at the site of the destroyed temple. Rav Kook was asked why the Jewish people make such a fuss over the Western Wall. "After all," drawled an English officer, "it is just a bunch of rocks, one on top of the other." Rav Kook replied that yes, just as there are hearts which are made of stone, so too there are stones which are made of heart. That, I believe, is what the Kotel HaMaravi is. It obviously has enormous Kedusha. Whether or not we should be putting notes in, that we saw a little bit today. So we saw our 3 questions. Number 1, why do people put notes in the Kotel? Number 2 is, are you even allowed to touch the Kotel? What's the halachic status of the Kotel? And number 3, what happens to these notes? Are you allowed to throw them out, or do they have any kedusha whatsoever? Everyone have a wonderful week.